Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Wow. You know, there are days that we're just more challenged around here, aren't we? I walk in here and Paul, hey, Paul, we ready to go?
Yeah.
No, we're not ready to go. Yeah. Why aren't we ready to go? I don't know. We're trying to figure it out.
We were playing some other stuff just to test it. People were like, what? The show started, then it didn't? And
I don't know if I can do a show at a radio station that has it together.
You wouldn't know what to do. You'd walk in and be all set. I don't know.
Maybe it appeals to my...
Well, first of all, though, you'd have to be on time at a real radio station. Ooh.
I'm sorry. Were you ready for me today?
No.
Uh-huh.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, so...
All right.
So, you know...
And you knew that coming in when you arrived 3 minutes before the show.
Before the show. Right. So,
okay.
As I tell people, I may be late, but I'm never slow. Okay. But, you know, challenges... Every business has challenges. Obviously, OC Talk Radio business model has challenges,
too. Has challenges, yeah.
Right?
We're challenged these days. Yeah.
You're challenged?
We got challenges.
Yeah, can I just basically just compliment you on your color palette today?
Do you like this?
Yes. I mean...
The two go together. I thought the lizard goes with the cargo shorts.
But why don't you stand up in front of the camera, Paul?
I think I'll pass on that one.
For anybody who's been listening to this show long enough, you know that basically I have this ongoing joke with Paul. That, you know, anytime he basically veers away from his typical wardrobe selections, I'm just kind of like thrown.
It's warm enough.
You're ready to like.
I'm ready to hang out.
You're ready for the weekend.
I'm ready. I'm party. Let's go.
Yeah, but the traditional signature.
I'm gonna party with your guests because we're both 64 here.
The signature. Cargo.
He just told me he's 64.
Will you let me get that out, please?
No, I'm trying to change the subject.
Hold on while I get this out.
I'm soon to be 65, so you're a kid.
The signature Roberts cargo shorts.
Won't let this go.
Are on full display today, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
If you could only see what I can
with
see.
Is
it Sedona, Arizona? What is it?
Sedona.
Whoa, like that color. It was a dead giveaway. Paul.
I went to Sedona and they have this like red earth.
Somebody went to Sedona
everything. And
all I got was this T-shirt.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I'm looking at, ladies
That's
and gentlemen.
It.
But the point is, we are challenged at OC Talk Radio.
We're eating popcorn today.
And the person, if you guys are watching us on YouTube, you realize that my guest actually immediately jumped in with a solution to our lack of resources of this kettle corn that's sitting on a table because neither one of us actually had lunch. Okay? And so this is our lunch. So thank you, Paul Roberts, for providing lunch also.
Always. Nothing but the best.
He did also, though, refuse to give me any of his pretzel sticks.
Well, there's a limit to love.
Because it's all about resources
limit
and
to
availability
love, right.
And capacity. Right? Paul is like, what the heck is going on? See, I'm going to bring it back around because my guest is basically a problem solver. He is a hired gun. I tried to get Paul to actually do some gunslinging music, but that didn't work. And basically, the gentleman in front of me, Bruce, my buddy Bruce, a fellow, would we call ourselves fixtures at the Center Club?
Ooh.
Yes.
Fixtures.
A fellow fixture at the Center Club. I've been called
Mr. Daly.
You're Mr. Daly?
Yeah.
Okay. Fixture. Mr. Daly, for those who are familiar
like
with the Center Club.
Yeah.
But we are both members of the Center Club, which is down the street. And it's amazing because there's a lot of people of... notoriety and renown that actually frequent that place.
That's the truth. It really is. Yeah.
And Bruce and
at least
I were
here in Orange
we're,
County.
We're talking. I'm like, hey, so Bruce, what do you do? And he goes, I am the director general. And I'm like, there's going to be an embassy name coming
you
up.
You got
after
a salute
that, right?
When you talk to
director,
this guy.
Director general of the nation of Brunei or something. I don't know who knows what. Right? What came after that was the director general of
your CFO.
Your CFO. So Bruce, basically, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm not even going to try to attempt to to describe what you do, but you do a very important job for, and we were just talking about it before we got on the air. Why don't you tell people what you do currently, and then we'll talk about how you got to what you're doing now.
I'm a fractional CFO, and I work for small companies, closely held, from startup to about $25 million in sales. And I come in and fix all of the problems they've ignored for years on the financial side of their business.
Now, the only fractional anything I know about is timeshares.
Right.
So what the heck is a fractional CFO?
Fractional.
Fractional CFO. Fractional.
You know, that's what fractional. I am. I'm a fractured engineer.
Yeah, you're a fractured engineer, so that's why you need a fractional CFO.
That's right.
Fractional CFO, or the word fractional today to me, is the new name for consulting. Hmm. Everybody, you know, has
almost sounds like scalable.
Yes, well, that's true.
I'm just rephrasing because we hear the word scalable all the time.
Yeah,
but I know exactly where you're going with this, and how important that really is. Right, it almost touches on everything else that we have already gotten almost to the point of totally comfortable with on-demand services.
Right.
Right. Whether it's Uber or massage or
buying your groceries,
you know,
whatever it is.
Yeah. Paul basically getting on the ball and calling bring in some pretzel sticks for
us. I wanted to find an Uber that had a massage with it. But that's another,
show. Dude, you were freaking out when I brought a massage therapist into the
That's true.
Okay, don't be acting
all big.
I'm just
trying to be funny here.
Wow, you're such a bowler over there. Okay. All right. But on-demand services are the way to go in a lot of cases, right? Because it controls cost.
Well, if you were to hire somebody like me, mm-hmm. most companies that I work for can't afford me
full-time. They'd hire you versus Paul. But, yeah. Okay.
They can't afford somebody like me full-time. But they still need the CFO financial services that I bring. And it's like you don't hire a lawyer mm-hmm. and keep them on staff. You use a lawyer to solve your problems, and then you go back and forth with them from there on. And I'm pretty much the same way, but I concentrate on the back of the business, or what somebody else said is the game of the business.
Okay, so what is that back of the business that you specialize in?
Well, I'll use one of the projects I've just got that I'm finishing up. Guy had been in business, he put his sons in business. They've been running a business for 3 years, and they hadn't done any accounting, any tax reporting, anything.
In 3 years.
And so he hired me, and I came in to put it all together. And when I asked for the records, they gave them to me in those big container boxes. And they weren't in order. They were just thrown in there. And there were receipts. There were checking statements. There were credit receipts. There were 3 years. I mean, there were seven boxes like that.
How big of a company is this?
This company is doing about $1 million a year. And now that with what we're doing, it's going to turn into a $12 to $15 million a year business in the next year.
What would cause a company, I'm assuming from the way you described it, that was already going, and then the sons basically were running it?
Well, this was a new startup.
Oh, it was a new startup. He put them in business, right? Yeah. And for 3 years, and they basically did not have all of that stuff in place. Why would that be the case? Like, how could?
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Well, that's where I'm going. It's not an unusual.
No, I talked to a client in Atlanta yesterday, and he hasn't done his 17 or 18 taxes yet. And the only time he does any financial reporting is when he sends the information he has to his accountant to get the taxes done. He doesn't run an AR. And he's got a business that's doing $5 million a year that's billing all over the place. And one of his problems is he doesn't run an AR, an accounts receivable aging. So he doesn't know he has a problem with somebody not paying him until it's too late.
And is this just common with an owner operator, single proprietor, one person company, or is this also you see this happening also in a company that has multiple employees?
All of these are multiple employee companies. The guy that in Atlanta, he's $5 million a year, and he's a security service where he puts guards out, and he's all over the South and the Eastern Seaboard. He's got 250 employees. I did a restaurant group that in 2 years ago or 3 years ago that didn't have a general ledger. They have seven locations and 260 employees. And when I asked their accountant for the general ledger, he kind of looked at me like, "What's that?"
Well, and how can you operate? Because you got incoming, you got responsibilities and things that you owe. You got people that owe you. I mean, how do you track it? Is it just basically one person remembering? I mean,
well, no, this guy was using QuickBooks to do his paying of his invoices. He brought his invoices in and paid them off. And he had a payroll company that did all of his payroll services. Yeah. And it's a restaurant. So he gets paid every day. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a big receivable. And he was running this like it was a shoestring, like when he started 19 years ago when his mom was doing the books. Mom died, and literally the receptionist or the hostess that he liked became his bookkeeper. Mm-hmm. And they had no idea what they were doing. And most of these people are making so much money, they can afford to be this sloppy. Right. And then they're complaining, I'm not making enough money.
Right, because when you're making the money, then you're not worried about, you don't realize that you make, are not running efficiently, you're not running at the best that you can, well, you may be risking certain things.
Well, the guy I talked to in Atlanta, he was talking about, he said, I've got two clients that owe me $500,000. And I said, well, how'd you let it get that high? He said, I didn't know, because he wasn't running an accounts mm-hmm. receivable mm-hmm. aging. And with all of the things that are available to you today, mm-hmm. there's no excuse for this. I mean, you can use Salesforce, QuickBooks, a multitude of different programs.
How long have you been doing this?
I have been in,
as a sort of on demand or
about 3 years. I did it
fractional.
I did it earlier in another iteration, but I've been doing this as a pure fractional for about 3 years. I spent the 5 years prior to that working as internal CFOs for other people, and I've owned my own company and done all of this. It is what I do.
Mm-hmm. And do you specialize in any particular industry? Because you were just throwing a whole bunch of them on all over the place.
It's not an industry. It's a type of client.
Okay, so what would be your, like, to...
The client is from, you know, startup to $25 million in sales. Really about 10 is where most of them start to end. I've got a couple that are larger. People that are running a business and they've been growing it for years, and they're saying, I've got this great business. I'm paying all my bills. I'm having a great time. And nobody will lend me any money. Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm. And it's because they're not reporting. They're mm-hmm. not doing mm-hmm. the things right.
Yeah, you don't have the paperwork to basically justify you.
Yeah. And the thing that I like to talk about is we all know about Watson, mm-hmm. the great intelligent computer. Well, everybody in the finance world is moving closer and closer to using something like Watson to make their decisions. So if you don't have your paperwork and your information in order to present it, Watson's going to decline you. Mm-hmm. And you may have a great business, and Watson's not going to do the time. So what you're doing is, while you're saving yourself money by not doing all this paperwork, you're costing yourself money, because the next person that's going to lend you mm-hmm. isn't the A credit, it's the C credit. Mm-hmm. And they're going to charge you three times as much. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's cost savings to spend money. Mm-hmm. And telling that to small businessmen is the hardest thing in the world, is get them to understand you spend money to save money. And that's the thing I fight a lot of.
Is that, and that's just a common, that's a common reality with a lot of businesses that are smaller businesses? Or
they've spent their whole life worrying about the dollars and cents. And when you come in and say, hey, this project's going to cost you $30,000, their heads explode.
Yeah, they've been doing it on a hope and a dream and a shoestring, and now you're telling them, that's awesome, but, you know.
Well, one of the clients I last worked for in-house, mm-hmm. he had 7 restaurants. He had all of these things. And when we were through, his financials, everything he had done, he was now a bankable credit. Mm-hmm. And he had never been a bankable credit before. And we turned him around. We got him all cleaned up. And he's in a much better place for building where he wants to go with his life. Mm-hmm. Because everything he had done before that was, well, I'll borrow money from my friend. I'll mm-hmm. borrow money from the most expensive guy in the world. Mm-hmm. And now he's doing something different. He's in a better place.
So is it, Bruce, just not knowing any better? Is it, I mean, you obviously encounter a lot of people. Can you distill it to a couple of repetitive mistakes or repetitive mindsets that people...
It's accounting's not important. That's the first thing you hear.
Okay.
I only need to worry about that at year end when I report my taxes.
Ah, okay.
And that's not true. It's what's important is to grow your business. You can stay at this size, a small little company, mm-hmm. for the rest of your life and run it out of a checkbook. Mm-hmm. But if you want to go from having 5 employees to having 500, mm-hmm. you've got to be doing these things.
Right.
And I just did a transaction that I'm in the middle of closing up right now that they had never done third party reporting. They'd never had a CPA come in and do the reporting. Nice little company. They're growing by leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is what we need to do. We did a two-year comparative financial with a good CPA. And it was brutal on them because they said, well, we don't ever have to think about all of this. Mm-hmm. And when it was through, they're now saying, I do this every year. And I don't have to tell them that. They got to the end of, well, I didn't know I was doing this. I didn't know I was doing this. And that's what you hire a third-party firm for, is somebody to look at what you're doing besides your people.
So what makes you want to do this in a fractional approach versus, for example, working in-house?
I don't like the politics of working for somebody else. Everybody, when you work inside the company, you have to deal with all of their problems.
Sure. Anybody who's worked any kind of corporate told you that.
And I don't fit there. I am very much a lone wolf. I like working on my own. And I like, to me, being a CFO is you're going to complete a project, they're going to fire you. Mm-hmm. So let's just approach it like I'm going to complete this project and then I'll go on to the next one. Mm-hmm. And
You're managing your own expectations.
Right.
And theirs.
Well, but the other side of it is it gives me the freedom to look at somebody and say, I know what my biggest problem is. It's you. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, there's that independence.
I don't have to worry about it. You're
not internal. You haven't drank the Kool-Aid. You haven't kissed the ring.
I'm not worried about being fired.
Yeah. Well, actually, to be honest, I think anybody who's smart, who's bringing you in, that independence of thought, that ability to basically transcend the internal culture of the organization and bring in a perspective from the outside is probably smart for what they're paying for.
Right.
Anyway, like to bring you in and then just basically to get to be conforming is almost like defeats the whole purpose of why you were brought in.
Well, think about it this way. You're running a small company or I go into this small company and they're hiring me to be their CFO full time. Mm-hmm. Problem is mom's doing the books. Mm-hmm. Mom has no accounting background, and I walk in with all of this information, and I've got to fire mom. Mm-hmm. Or I've got to find a way to deal with mom that they don't want me to do. Mm-hmm. Whereas a fractional, it's here's what we need to do, and it becomes...
It's not us, mom, that want to get you out of the position of what you've been doing. It's this guy.
Yeah.
That's on the outside that just came in and, you know, we're paying him. So, you know, like...
Well, and the thing is part of what I do, though, is taking mom out and asking her if she enjoys what she's doing.
Right. You're right, because mom may not be enjoying what she's doing. She may be doing it out of responsibility or sense of necessity.
Mom hates it. 9 out of 10 times you get that person that's in that position, mom, brother, sister, wife, and they're doing all this work. And it's like, do you like what you're doing? Mm-hmm. No, I hate it because I don't understand it. Well, let me show you how to do it cheaper. And give you a supervisory role where you understand what you're doing.
I'll give you a perfect example that just happened to me recently that is not on the financial side, but I think it's interesting because there's some parallels to it. Not unusual when you're talking about a family-owned business. You're not, and family-owned businesses could be massive and still be family-owned, right? I have a client basically I've been working with, and we have been proposing certain things for the repositioning of their business visually or their place of business. And we ended up basically going through a bunch of stuff. And I knew early on that, you know, the person I was connecting with is one of the decision makers, but actually his mom also carries a lot of weight in what she needs to do. So we went through a presentation, one layer presentation, then we had to kind of go back and do another layer of presentation. And I realized that this is now going to be what we need to do, right? So I wasn't trying to out anybody out of the sequence or anything, right? But what was interesting is and everything was working fine. We're just making sure that those people that needed to approve were given the opportunity to approve, and that we took the time to explain to them why we're doing what we're doing, blah, blah, blah. Okay, all right. What was interesting is we are in the process, and we are now like halfway through the process. And we had a particular item that we needed to decide on whether we go with this particular material or that particular material. And we went through 3 days where basically the material had been approved. Then the material was approved by other people, to where I got a text message one night saying, well, 80% of the people approve, like it, 20% don't. And I'm like, what people are we talking about now, right? But because the operation of the business, beyond just the ownership, is so closely knit, they opened up the decision and review and asked opinions of every single person that they basically have been working with or is part of their quote-unquote extended family, though they're not blood, okay, for their input. So what they ended up doing is bringing in the old cliche of too many cooks in the kitchen. And I had to basically actually say that. I said, designed by committee usually ends up to a diluted, watered down nothing.
Well, do you know what a camel is?
A what?
Do you know what a camel is?
What is a camel?
A horse designed by a committee.
There you go.
It's just, right. I'm sorry.
So it was really funny because I actually found myself having to engage, to tell the client in a very nice way that designed by committee isn't going to work and that usually this would happen. And what was interesting was the reaction back, because within their own cultural dynamic, they had been doing this thing in such a way for so long that nobody had ever basically questioned the fact that this is actually efficient. That's just how they do it. Yeah. They all sit around the dinner table. Anybody with an extended family will tell you there's a certain amount of dysfunction comes into out of this, even though there's so much love overpouring every, you know, all over the place. It was interesting because the reaction was sage advice. And then I said, okay, well, if we're entering sage advice mode, then maybe I'll go one step further. I'll take another risk here. I'll stick my neck out. And I said, you guys should probably decide on one, at most two people to make the decision, right? That's awesome. So they basically, they said, yeah, that's right. This person, are the only people are going to be making the decision. Okay, great. Awesome. So then I got a decision. It's a go. We're going to go with it, right? That was at night. Tomorrow, the next morning, it flipped. Right? So what I'm trying to point out is it is interesting sometimes that we are so in the weeds that we don't realize the actual genuine benefit of a third party that is from the outside coming in and actually having a fresh set of eyes on something. And those are the kind of little things that I think would probably get in the way of company expansion.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe transition of ownership from one generation to the other. You know, I'm going to have my son run it now, but I'm basically showing up every day, even though I'm not taking any decisions, but everybody who's basically been working with me for the last 20 years still sees me every day. And I'm basically saying the leadership is now in the next generation. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting kind of dilemma that happens there, right?
Well, and that's one of the problems of being the second generation in most businesses. Most businesses, the first generation does all the work. Second generation screws it up, runs it right into the ground.
So who comes back to fix it?
Sometimes it
Bruce does.
Yeah, sometimes it's people like me, and sometimes it doesn't get fixed. Mm-hmm. It's very rare in my years of experience to see the second generation come in and actually make it better than the first generation.
Well, you and I have talked about this, right? And we kind of been flippant a little bit about the fact that in both of our industries and how we deliver, you know, at this point in our lives, we have no qualm telling people, you know, good people spend good money on what I've been saying. Good people spend good money on bad consultancy every day. How do we know? Because they call us to fix it, right?
Right. Well, and it's my mantra that I tell people about. Uh-huh. I'm the most expensive free employee you'll ever have because mm-hmm. I cost you a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But by the time I'm through, mm-hmm. I've saved you much more than I've cost mm-hmm. you. And I only have one client that I don't think I've done that for. And I told that client that I didn't think I had done it for him. And he goes, no, you've saved me more money than you've cost me.
Oh, that's interesting.
But he looked at it from a different way than I did, because my work got him a huge tax refund. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I'm going to give you credit with getting me that money back.
Right. And he benefited. It was just different from the way you were benchmarking it.
And it's interesting that to say you're expensive, but you're free. Mm-hmm. And every client that I've ever worked for says that. Because it's, where else can I save you money? I might cost you money here, mm-hmm. but favorite story that just happened. I have a client who has been working in one location and has completely outgrown it. So they're going to move into a new location. And he calls me and says, yeah, this is what I think it's going to cost. This is where it's at. And I said, so who's negotiating for you? And he said, well, I'm negotiating with the owner of the building. I said, no, you're not. You're going to call my buddy who's somebody I know and work with, who's a commercial realtor who has whatever that initial is at the end mm-hmm. of his name, and he'll take care of it for you. And he goes, well, I can't afford that. And I go, and this is something that most people don't seem
to. I can't afford that, but yet if there's savings in the negotiation. Yeah,
but here's the bigger part.
He's not saying that.
What most people don't know is if you're in a commercial real estate situation mm-hmm. and you're entering into a commercial lease, mm-hmm. the landlord pays your realtor. Mm-hmm. It's completely free to you to hire that realtor to come in there. Mm-hmm. That particular transaction, the guy thought, well, I might get $15,000 worth of build-up, and I might get a month's free rent. He got 2 months' worth of free rent, $40,000 worth of build out, and then 2 months later down the road, I think. I'm not sure what it all is, but he saved more money than I'm ever going to cost him in just that negotiation. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, that it's not, I'm brilliant. I've just done it before. Mm-hmm. I've seen this before.
You know what to ask for? Mm-hmm. I would say they're probably more efficient, right, too, as far as time used to get from point A to point B.
Right. It's like if I worked with you, you know how to do the flooring and the furniture and make it all work together. I don't.
Right.
And it's more efficient to let you do your job than me get in there and try to figure out how to do it.
No, it's true. It's very true. And I think also duration of time of doing something and expertise in it. You know, there are efficiencies that we bring to the table that basically are due to the fact that we've been doing it so long, that there are certain paths that you just don't even go down because you already know.
This is a waste of time.
It's a waste of time.
Well, and it's...
And you're willing to tell somebody who looks like he's going off the cliff. You're called to go off the cliff there, Thelma and Louise, but basically, you know, there's a cliff there.
Right. And it's also, how often does this business owner restructure his business?
Mm-hmm.
Once in his lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
If he's really bad, twice.
Mm-hmm.
I restructure businesses 5-6 times a year.
Yeah, yeah.
How many times does he interview CPAs and make sure his CPA is doing the right report?
Once.
Once. Yep. I do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
What about the payroll company? What about all of these people that work for you that you hire not knowing what you should know to ask?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know these people. And it's like, you're ready to go to a bank and borrow money, Mr. Customer. How many times have you done that?
Mm-hmm.
And I know the bank. The better part is I play poker with one of the bankers. You know, so it's... I'm talking to people on a different level than they ever will.
I mean, the worst thing you can do as a business owner is to convince yourself that you know something about something you don't know anything about.
Isn't that true about everything, though?
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I'm just flashing on multiple examples in my head where basically decisions are being made from some weird combination of reasons that have nothing to do with the actual basis. Like, you don't know.
Well,
yet you can't tell yourself you don't know. You can't tell anybody else you don't know. And you're making decisions that are going to come back and hurt you.
Well, it's like I have a quote that I use all the time. And if you hear me say it, it means I screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, gee, that seemed like a good idea at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that means I screwed up. My favorite one when you're talking to a business owner is, it's the way I've always done it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're where you're at because it's the way you've always done it. Change is hard for a human being.
The way we're wired is that we're actually the antithesis of change.
But the problem is we need change to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be uncomfortable to grow. You have to get outside of your little circle and your zone. And the way we've always done it is exactly the reason to find a new way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that's what you say, you should be looking at it and say, well, if that's the way I've always done it, is there a better way?
Mm-hmm.
And especially today, there are so many systems and places to replace people and to bring costs under control. I mean, one of the things is, and I'm going to put a plug in for somebody else here, you're doing invoices and all of that. Why aren't you on bills.com?
Mm-hmm.
All of the bills go into the system. You approve them. You get all of the stuff. And it goes off and gets paid. You don't have to go through every invoice and enter it. You don't have to do all of this. And you've improved your control and you've improved your efficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
If you're still mailing out checks to pay bills, really?
Why?
Yeah. It's so much more efficient to hit a button and it's gone. And I mean, that's the changes that we're at a point that it's getting easier and easier.
Mm-hmm.
To do more and more.
Well, and while it's getting easier and easier to do more, every single business at whatever scale it is facing more and more sophisticated competition.
Right.
More and more costs of operating.
Oh, in California?
Right. Yeah. And so your efficiencies, well, sorry, and because of that, the margins are smaller and smaller. So unless you are basically in one of those industries or one of those markets that you have so much incoming that you don't have to worry until it stops incoming, basically.
Right.
Right. You are faced with genuine real time, not like I got to make a business plan basically for the next 5 years. Yes. But you're basically having to calibrate, adjust, and fine tune almost on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
And your awareness level has to be reflective of the ability to do that. And so if you're not operating like that, it is only a matter of time, because before somebody eats away at your market share, eats away at your clients, provides alternative, more efficient ways to basically for, or convenient ways for them to basically contract with somebody else. Yeah.
Well, and the other problem,
regardless
is,
of industry, I think that's just that's the reality of life these days.
But the other problem that we're seeing right now a lot of is we've had an upwardly mobile economy for 9 years, mm-hmm. 8 years. It's unheard of that this economy has gone as long as it has. And everybody's going, it's going to keep going. Well, I'm 63, and I've heard people say it's going to keep going right before it dove off the cliff
You know what I find very funny? Because I agree with you. And I think I've said it, and people call me a bear at this point or whatever. But I've said, we'll be lucky if we come out of the summer without a turndown. Okay, the only reason that it will be short up for 2020 is because somebody in the federal government will do everything and pull every trick known to man to make sure that the economy does not become a factor of the next incoming election. And as much as that is the case, I will still say, I'm going to put $5 on the table right now, okay, that if we survive through the summer before an economic downturn, or at least the beginning signs of an economic downturn, because you start reading certain things, and when you have the building permits pulled on multi-unit developments in San Diego go to half the number of permits that were pulled last year.
There's an indicator.
There's an indicator. When you have somebody who basically tracks the hospitality industry and they do benchmarks, measure a very creative benchmark, actually, which is the number of defaults on car loans in the state of California, which is a very car necessary economy, okay, and culture. When you start seeing an increase in people defaulting on their car loans, which is like, take my child, but I'm not giving up my car, right?
Right.
Then there's something going on. And I'm not trying to be a pessimist or sky is falling guy, but what I'm saying is, to your point, we have had such a ride that to be delusional that there is not going to be some sort of corrective benchmark, right? I don't care what's driving that. It's delusional.
Well, but we have not fixed the problems that created the last one.
Oh, we don't fix problems, Bruce.
We
kick the can down the road. If you don't believe me, look at the homeless situation in Orange County. Total abdication of leadership at the Board of Supervisors level until they got their hands and their backside spanked by a judge.
Yeah. It's
and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, there's money to be made in this industry called homeless. Let's just all now get into it. I mean, there is, remember when you're growing up and somebody says to you, if you don't care, of the problem that you're facing today, it's not going to go away. It's likely to become a bigger problem.
Well, it's the dragon that lives underneath the bed. You're by not feeding it, you're feeding it.
I used it to toast my bread, basically, yeah. But that's a different story altogether. Right. But no, I think it's funny. And the people that, to your point, when you start talking about this, about the economy and where we're at and how this impacts everything, especially businesses that are tight. Like it used to be that you need a certain square footage in order to function as a business. Now you got scalable versions of this that are version A and version B and version C that can exist in a quarter, if not a tenth of the space at lower rent rates, at higher desirable locations, and a business model that can still work. And chances are it's somebody who used to work for you that's now basically operating your competition, right?
Right.
And they're smarter and faster or more agile, more responsive, app driven for their customer service. And you're basically still sitting there trying to figure out whether you should send them a handwritten note or not.
Well, it's one of my clients is still using the same POS system that is a POS that's 17 years old. And it doesn't generate any reports for him. The guy across the street doing the same thing has the brain.
I don't know, guys, if you guys picked up the little kind of tongue-in-cheek humor there from Bruce, but what he was basically saying is the POS system, a point-of-sale system, that's a piece of shit. But I'm just saying, a POS, that's a POS. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And it's to spend the money to put a new POS system in isn't that much money.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you that much more control. Why are we not?
Dude, you don't even have to buy it. You could lease it. It could be cloud-based. I mean, there's so many friggin' options these days, right?
Some of the credit card companies will give you theirs.
Yeah, just for the processing fee.
Right. And it's what – there are so many ways to solve problems and that people say, well, I don't need to solve it yet. Well, solve it today because then when it starts to really get shitty – you're prepared
so
for the
you guys,
problem.
You guys heard this right here, right? We talked about it in terms of business, which is very true. Okay. We're talking about it in terms of even bigger picture, like policy and advocacy. Okay. Solve the problem, people, today, because if you don't solve it today, it's just likely to be just a bigger problem tomorrow. And it's definitely not going to go away. So it's not like I'll get to it later. If I ignore it, it'll go away. Okay. That didn't work when you were seven. It definitely doesn't work when you're basically running a company, regardless of whether you have employees or otherwise.
I tried ignoring an ex-wife, and she didn't go away. It only got worse.
See, there you go.
So I mean,
there's another example. But really, I mean, what I guess we're trying to talk about here is that it is a very increasingly competitive business market out there.
Absolutely.
Their likelihood is that you are going to face some sort of correction. It could be a soft correction. It could be a hard correction. Anybody who's telling you they can forecast, I will tell you as a former economics student and degree holder, that kind of forecasting ain't forecasting. That's backcasting. That's using data from the past to try to predict what's going to happen in the future. There's always variables at play, okay? We have an election year. We have insecurity, a sense of insecurity, okay? We have uncertainty. We have a large population of seniors that are basically all took a hit on their 401ks and their pensions when the economy turned last time, that are now working longer. The age of employment or retirement, is going to go up out of necessity now.
Look at the average age of a worker at McDonald's.
What is the average age of a worker?
I don't know what it is, but it's over doubled because it used to be 17, 18.
Right, and now he's easily people in their 20s and 30s.
Right, and if you go into
Or older.
If you go into the average McDonald's, chances are there are three or four people our age or older who are running the cash registers being up front. And those people are staying in the workforce longer. Mm-hmm. And they have to. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. Because if, to me, McDonald's was an entry-level job. Mm-hmm. Well, grandma's got the job. What's grandson going to do for his entry level?
Because grandma needs that job to sustain her Medicare, to support her other stuff. And, you know, if she can get a company to basically carry her medical, she's getting a little bit better. Yeah, we have kicked the can down the road on so many things for a whole range of reasons. And if we operated things a little bit more with the understanding that it is smart to have good advice, it's smart to have a support system, whether it is temporary, fractional, or more in-house, long-term, that we are doing ourselves a favor reaching out and asking for that support. Whether it's your company that you're operating, and if you think you can't afford to have an executive wing of services, there's everything from SCORE to people like Bruce, to people that can bring that wealth of information and knowledge, and basically are not looking to get into your company on this pretense and then basically trying to, you know, feather it in a nest as a job. They're there to do a task. They're a hired gun to do this. It's an on-demand service, okay? You don't hire a taxi company and you go buy a taxi company so that you can take a taxi to go to the airport. You call the taxi to use for when you want to go to the airport, right?
Right.
Now we have Uber. Oh. Now we have layers of service through Uber. On-demand services are now becoming multi-tiered.
But Ford has changed their name. They're no longer a car manufacturer.
What is Ford now?
They're a transportation company.
There you go.
And their whole thing is to be a transportation solution.
Kodak is not a camera company anymore.
Right? The film. Go buy film and try.
Film. Where do you process film these days?
I don't know. Right. And the other thing that's interesting that I want to put a plug in about here is if somebody owns a company. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing great for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Do they have a succession plan? What happens I used to be a lender.
No, they're like Rapunzel in the tower, Bruce. They're going to be stuck in there spinning that friggin' wheel until they fall out of the tower.
But the other side of it is the risk they're putting on everybody else. I have a really weird story.
Yeah.
I do a big cabinet maker. Mm-hmm. I do all of his financing. He's got a whole bunch of equipment. Know him. Nice guy. He's 40 years old. Mm-hmm. He's got a 38-year-old wife and a couple teenagers, and he's going great. No plan about where this is going to go. And he's, you know, leased all of his equipment. He's doing great. He goes out and runs into a tree skiing. Kills himself. That event destroyed his entire family. Mm-hmm. We had to help his family liquidate a company that was huge because there was nobody to, he had no succession plan, nobody who could step in. Mm-hmm. In-N-Out went through this years ago when their plane went down. Mm-hmm. Mom had to come back in and take the company over. Mm-hmm. Because there was really no, the CFO and the president went down in a plane. Mm-hmm. That succession plan is something that you should be thinking about all of the time. Mm-hmm. What happens, you know, I was always told a good boss has two people behind them that can replace them right now. Mm-hmm. Makes it, A, easier for them to mm-hmm. get promoted. Mm-hmm. But it also makes it easier should something happen for the business mm-hmm. to go forward.
I mean, we're sitting in a room right now that basically is a business that was basically, I would totally call it an encore career for you, Paul. Right?
Yeah. I'm listening with eager ears to this whole discussion. Half of what he described is me here.
Yeah, it's you. And you basically don't have any succession plan. Who wears the cargo shorts if Paul Roberts is not around?
I've thought about that. People have said, what else? And I don't know. My daughter doesn't want to do it. My wife doesn't know how to do it. If I ran into a tree skiing, which is why I don't ski.
That would be probably as odd as me seeing you in a sport coat. But that's
all of those things. I don't have good accounting. I don't have good. I'd run it out of a checkbook. I do everything he listed. You could just substitute my face in it, front of it here.
And yet, and I've asked this question on the air before, and he has answered it. It took me about 3 years to have the gut to ask it. Right. But I asked him. I said, "How are you doing?" Because this is not what he did before.
Right.
Paul basically repped a couple of brands, right? A couple of companies.
I did that, and I did PR for years.
And then basically found himself, you know, at the point of where either he had to do something or his wife was going to kick him out of the house or something, you know, after he lost his accounts. And he comes in and does this, right? Paul, you can answer the question. You know what I'm going to ask. How has this been for you financially?
I make more money, have more fun, and feel like I'm cool and relevant and on the cutting edge again here. And interestingly enough, one of the things that came up before is this idea of what comes next.
Yep.
When I started this, I was just thinking, can I get it going? I wasn't thinking about where does it go or how does it grow or what happens to it next.
How long ago was that, Paul?
It was 6 years ago.
Okay, so you're coming on the latter end of a decade of basically being in business.
Yeah, right. A business so I didn't
perfect,
even know
perfect
existed.
Perfect example right here where we're sitting, yeah. Bruce, right?
Well, did you plan on doing what you're doing right now when you got out of school?
No, it's his fault. I walked in here and he basically said, would you like to do a show?
But that's the thing. You can have a plan when you're 18 or 25 or even 40.
Yeah.
Or 50, and something can change that plan.
Very much so.
Life happens when you make plans,
yeah,
right?
Plans don't mean anything.
Don't mean anything. In fact, I think life has a sort of a really twisted karmic sense of humor that when you make plans and you really hold on to them, is that when really it basically sets out to disrupt you.
That's deja vu.
Yeah.
No, I heard you say that before.
Yeah. It's very true. No, it's very true. Because I think as much as making plans, and there are people that basically live by chapter and verse and color coding on a piece of paper and numbering and, you know, list of agenda items and to-do lists and all this stuff and little color tabs. I mean, there's a whole industry built for those people. Yeah. Color tabs. Those are called obsessive ODD. Okay. They're ODD. They're not OCD. They're ODDs, right? What? But that being said, I am the exact opposite, so I've actually learned to appreciate some things and take the rest of it and throw it out the window.
Well,
but you got to be open.
I'm a control freak. Okay? I'm a chef. What I do, I'm a control freak.
Okay.
And I admit it. My ex-wife used to cuss at me for that. But here's the thing.
This is going to get deep now. Okay.
but here's the thing.
No, I know where it's going. Yeah.
I knew enough to know that I can't control everything.
Oh, so a control freak learn to surrender.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there are certain things I can't control. This is what I can
control. That alone is grounds for hiring you.
Okay. Well, thanks.
I agree.
But if if you're someone that's the opposite of a control freak, there are still things you control.
Oh, yeah. No, listen, at the end of the day, it's not just only control. It's also accountability. It's personal engagement, right? It's not abdicating responsibility. There's a whole bunch of layers like of that. But it is really funny that, in you know, we're talking about Paul in this particular case. Is he set up a company. The company is, he set up a company out of
necessity. Yeah.
But I don't know that you really were doing it for financial necessity. I think you were doing it because of, you know, let me maintain my sanity necessity. Probably.
Well, partly. And the Great Recession wiped out my previous business. So, yeah, I was left without, I had to find a way to revive that business or restart another business.
So let me tell you, to have a business go from, I have not even done this since I was in college, anywhere close to a mic, to basically after 6 years having 20 shows.
Yeah.
That is a pretty strong success story.
Thanks. But
to do it in cargo shorts, I mean, that's another layer.
That's another whole thing. But it's true, you know, because my expertise, I think this is true for most small business people or entrepreneurs or whoever starts a business. We have some interest in the business or some expertise we think we can turn into a business. Mm-hmm. None of that is about being in business, about running a business, right. About doing back end and accounting
and
payroll
you
and
work,
all that.
You and you will be the first to admit it. And I have to remind myself on occasion, and Bruce, you probably see this all the time too, is people work in their business.
Not on their business.
Not on their business.
Right. I could use everything Bruce is offering, but I fear, like most people, I couldn't afford to. I know you say we can't afford not to and all those things, but somebody would have to write him a check tomorrow, and I don't know. He seems like he'd be expensive.
So Bruce, how do you price out your services?
Well, it depends on the project.
If somebody shows up in cargo pants, you just bill them differently.
Give them a kind of a different break here.
I've got some projects I'm making no money working on. Because
can I be one of those?
Because it's the right thing to do. I've got a customer up in Baldwin Park that I'm working with a third generation of the same family. Mm-hmm. I've been dealing with this family since 1981.
Okay.
And the grandfather or the father who I did all the business with, he was a great guy. Mm-hmm. And he's raised a great group. And that family is the one that the kids have made the company better than dad made it. Mm-hmm. So the second generation have done the complete opposite of what you expect.
Right.
And the third generation doesn't want to be in the business. They're in another business. And they called me and asked me to help. And yeah, they paid me, I think, $5,000 along the way. Yeah, $5,000. That was a year ago. Mm-hmm. I'm still working with him. I'm meeting him tomorrow. We're doing planning. We're doing all of this. That's the thing you do. Mm-hmm. There are some places that
So it's not your fee structure and the size is not one size fits all. Not
no, it's there are a lot of variables. With Paul, he needs some help finding the right people to do
He needs some help.
But I can put him in touch with the right people and not have to be involved. Mm-hmm. It's just, and I'm going to say for Paul, if he's not doing his books, he's got to call a friend of mine named Bernadette. Mm-hmm.
I don't. I do everything out of a checkbook. I do everything out of napkins and pieces of paper and stuff here. I use QuickBooks a little bit, and the rest of it I try to put off until it's tax time.
And you hire...
We have a very quiet studio today, but there are times I've walked in here and there's like been chickens and eggs. And,
yes. It's very rural.
Chattel and bales of hay. I mean, he gets paid in all kinds of ways.
But the fact is there are people that will help you, that are affordable to you, that I can introduce you to, that aren't me doing the job.
Well, yeah. Bruce, Paul, let me ask you this. Paul, have you ever asked the question to anybody in the fact that you said, hey, how much would it cost for you to help me? You never did. You've never asked that question. But like most of us, we basically assume that the answer is, I can't.
Yes. Yeah.
But never ask the question to find out, you know, you're right. You can't afford that person. Because what happens when you ask that question and the answer comes back, I can't afford that person, there's usually some other alternative solution that comes out of that discussion.
There's an old rule, ask. Mm-hmm. The worst that you're going to get told is no.
Exactly.
And
if you don't ask, you're already there.
Yeah, you're already there.
So how do people ask you? We got to wrap it up. How do people ask you?
Well, before that, I want to ask him about something else.
Oh, okay. Oh, wait, got one more thing.
Every time
put
I
a pin on the
every,
table
yeah, every
there.
Time I see him, okay? I mean, I thought he was like some, you know, shaman, guru. I mean, he is a guru.
I think he is,
But, you know, Bruce actually has this yin-yang pin.
Okay.
Can you see it?
Not really. Now we can see it. Yeah, okay.
Yin-yang
pin. Yin and the yang, all right. Traditional Chinese symbol.
It's a lapel pin, and he's constantly got it on his sport coat.
Right.
Which, you know, I can appreciate from an aesthetic professional. I appreciate the fact that it's black and white because it pretty much goes with whatever he's wearing, right? But he's always got this pin, like, right?
Only you would think, right? Because it's black and white.
Listen. I appreciate that. You know, it was like, wow, the guy's got a sense of style, right? And he's smart because it works with everything. But he's always wearing this. So what's up with the yin and yang pin?
Well, yin and yang means balance, means male and female. It's the idea of hate. Love can't exist without hate.
Darkness, light.
And balance is something, and I was taught this at 17 years old by a guy.
Call me.
Yeah.
Did you have to snatch something out of his hand? Or
No, it was a guy.
Snatched something out of his hand.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah, beat him on the head and took his yin-yang pin.
No, he's thinking about kung fu.
Yeah, exactly. When you snatch this grasshopper, you may leave.
When you can walk on the rice paper without leaving footprints, yes, you may leave the temple.
But I was 17 years old, and, you know, imagine I grew up in a family music store in San Bernardino, and it's...
say no more. This explains everything.
1972, yeah. So it was like...
In San Bernardino.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. You're like the original Bill and Ted.
Well, I hope not. But this guy worked hard to help me try to find a balance. Mm-hmm. And he gave me one of these when I was 17 years old. And it's something that I've hung on to for all of these years because it's to remind me every day that life has a balance to it.
So this was at the music store?
Yeah. He gave it to me back then, and I stuck it in the hat I was wearing back then.
Somebody you know, Paul?
No.
But my father used to preach the same thing over and over. He was a good Midwesterner. That's a very Midwestern philosophy, even though it's not Middle Eastern or Chinese. It is it's that idea that everything in balance, everything in proportion, everything
And the other reason I like to wear it is when you're a business owner, Paul, is your business in balance?
No, it's all my business has always been, I suspect Rod's business is like this too, if he was honest. It's always in the creative side more than it is the bookkeeping side, accounting side.
It's where we deliver, but yeah, you're right. And it's funny because when it goes out of balance, then you're playing catch up and it's like harder. There's a higher cost to get it back into balance.
The price to be paid.
So it's actually much, much more efficient and costless to keep your life in balance or keep your business in balance than to actually go through the gyrations of out of balance and back in balance and out of balance and back in balance. I mean, that's just life.
Too many of us run, especially small businesses, run business as if we were Smokey the Bear.
Right.
We're always putting out fires.
And, well, the
nonprofits, too. Very
notorious. Oh, nonprofits, yeah.
But the other side of it is that, look, neither one of you, me included, all of us in this room, our strength is not doing accounting. Mm-hmm. Our strength is not out, you know, building books and doing all of these things.
You can't do it all.
But there are people who that's their strength. And you know what? They're cheap. They're really cheap when you take into account what they save you.
Yeah. Well, we should talk more offline. I'd be curious to know more about some of these things because I'm out of balance in that regard. I'm a creative person and not an accounting person. And so I dread it and put it off. And you'd be shocked if you saw how poorly books were.
No, I wouldn't.
No, you probably got some scary stories to share with you, actually. But no, I mean, I face the same dilemma sometimes with people in terms of value they put on design.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I can just go down to the Marshalls and the Michaels and the, you know, the outlets, and I'll just do it myself, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I will tell you, I have seen too many situations where we go in and fix it. Now, that means that you've had time loss. You've had cost loss. You've had, you know, non-functionality if it's a place of business because you didn't do it the way that could have been done right to begin with. And there's always this assumption, oh, I can't afford you. I mean, my worst asset is my portfolio.
Yeah, right.
Because they look at it and the first thing they say is, I can't afford you.
Right.
Well,
And I have to go through this whole rigmarole of, well, you know, we never get, you know, champagne taste. We never get champagne budget. Well, everybody wants champagne taste on a beer budget. And if we're, and then, you know, if we're lucky, we actually get imported beer, but usually most of the time it's domestic and maybe even light beer, right? Budget, right? Right? But we still have to deliver. But it's interesting because people have this assumption that if I bring somebody else on, it's going to cost me more.
In fact,
if you're not doing it, somebody else is doing it for you. Think of what now you can put your resources and time towards.
You're free to do other things.
Exactly. That you are better suited to spend your time
on. And I'm a chef. My fun thing I do is a chef. And
control freak.
Yes, absolutely. And when I was 21 years old, I bought, my best friend was going to Germany, and I had him buy me a set of German knives. Mm-hmm. Now, I paid $100 in 1970 to little up for this set of knives. I'm still using every one of those knives. Mm-hmm. Now, they were expensive to buy back then, mm-hmm. but I'm still getting return on those. Yeah. And my favorite chef's knife that I use all of the time is that knife, one of the knives he brought back from Europe. Mm-hmm. Life's like that. Invest in the good things. It will pay you back. Mm-hmm. If you buy the Ronco knives, mm-hmm. they're going to last you how long? Well, it's the same thing.
Until the next infomercial.
Right.
I'll give you a classic example. You don't even know this, but you're talking into one of the state-of-the-art microphones, and people often say, well, I'm going to do podcasting or whatever. I don't need all this equipment. I say, no, you don't. You could just talk right into your iPhone, and you think you're doing a good job. But the quality of that mic and its durability, I didn't make this up. It's been tested in radio stations for 50 years. And yes, it costs a lot more than anybody wants to spend, but you're going to use it for 20 years and it's going to give you a better result. And the sound is going to sound professional, not sound like you did it yourself. Mm-hmm. So there's an example like a knife. I view the same thing, audio quality, that in equipment, I'm sure Rod does when he looks at materials and other things. You say it's worth the investment, but at first you think you can do it for...
Yeah, spend the money on the right material and then avoid the additional cost of maintenance and repair and capital reinvestment down the road. Now, to be fair, it depends on what your business strategy is. If you're just like trying to make it look pretty so you can sell it, then it would be kind of stupid business to spend the money because that's your business model.
Right.
Now, I don't know how long you'll stay in business doing that or have, you know, in today's, you know, social media reputation that you will survive, you know, constantly putting out schlock just to get rid of it. But that's another layer. That, you know, that's kind of knowing your client, knowing your market, knowing what it is that you're trying to achieve. But again, even in those cases, I find that a lot of people don't have clarity. They don't have clarity of what it is that they're trying to do. They don't have clarity of what it is that is unique about how they're doing it. And that all translates to competitiveness or lack of it. Success in basically being able to build capacity. How the heck do you build capacity if you don't know what your financial statements are?
Or by the way, excuse me, where do you want to be in 5 years?
Don't bother me with the details.
Paul,
where do you want to be in 5 years?
I have no idea. Yeah. I have no idea.
And that's a very common answer, I would think.
Right.
If people are going to be honest.
And if you own a business that's requires a lot of plant facility, why aren't you buying the plant?
Why do people have such a hard time basically planning things like that?
Well,
is it uncertainty?
It's fear.
Is it in like a self-confidence?
It's fear. I have a client, or not a client, a very good friend who teaches karate in San Dimas. Mm-hmm. And I might get grief for you saying this. He's got the best karate dojo I've ever been in, and I spent 25 years in and out of these things. And he's built this giant, wonderful dojo. And he's got a great following and a great family and all of that. Mm-hmm. The building was up for sale, and he's a third of the building.
And how long has he been in the building?
5 years. Okay. And he's got to be in that building or in a building until he finishes and retires. Well, I told him, buy the building. Oh, I can't. It's too much of this. And I said, no, stop. Let's look at it and buy the building. He wouldn't listen to me.
Right. His assumption is not based on facts. It's just
his fears.
Feelings.
His fears.
Yeah.
And the fact is, he's going to teach karate for another 20 years. Mm-hmm. In 20 years, he wants to retire. Mm-hmm. What is his dojo worth? Zip. Because he walks out the door. If he bought the building...
He would continue to basically generate money from...
Or gee whiz, sell it the one time.
Or sell it one time. But it would have appreciated real estate.
Right.
Yep.
And they don't think that way. Your business is, you know.
So when you looked at it, was it still would it have been viable for him to buy the building?
It would have been slam dunk easy. But he and his wife are afraid of, I can't get that much debt. I can't do this. Mm-hmm. And what they don't realize is they have that much debt. It's called rent.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you look at these things, and that's look at what you're doing. Are you getting the best return for every dollar?
Actually, buying the building versus renting puts you in a better defensible position to sustain your business during the downturn. Because you're now not still having to come up with that rent. You're basically your own landlord.
Right. And if you do it right.
So I want to buy this building. I'm going to buy the office tower here. No.
There's nothing wrong with that.
How do people get in touch with you? The only thing wrong is we're going too long here. So how do people get in touch with
this
you?
This is really all for your benefit.
I know. Really. I want to talk to them offline. Forget about sharing this with the world. This would be me here.
I'm on LinkedIn under Bruce Braveroff.
Spell it. Spell the name.
B as in boy, R-A, V as in Victor, I-R-O-F-F. And if you're out there and you have the last name Braveroff and you don't talk to me, we're related. Call me. Seriously.
Can't be a lot of them.
No, it's all related to my great-grandfather.
What is it original?
It's Russian Jew, and it's literally my family's the only people with this name in the world. Mm.
Did they make was it altered when they came into the country?
I'm fairly sure there was an Irish guy. When my great-grandfather walked up and said, this is my name in Russian, and the guy wrote it down, here's your last name.
I walked up to the studio 40 years ago, and there was this Irish guy
who said,
you want to do a show?
But it's...
Your life is never the same after...
After you meet an Irish person, your screwed. Your family name or otherwise, never the same.
But that's true. It did happen a lot at Ellis Island where they couldn't spell the name and they didn't even try. They just said, here's your new name.
Right.
They just handed it to you, and the immigrants went, oh, okay. And they adopted this butcherized version of their real name and
never looked back.
Particularly Eastern European names, Polish.
Yeah,
Russian,
I'm glad we were done with Ellis Island by the time I got over here because they would have had a field day with mine.
Well, they wouldn't have put two A's in Rad.
Well, you know what? I think it's spelled with one A is wrong. I think if one A is good enough, then think about what if you had two A's.
Hey, so there you go. Oh, okay. Double A.
So with that double A public message to all our listeners, I want to thank you, Bruce, for being here. I think it's a conversation that's interesting. It's always, I think it's a service that is very valuable, if not even more valuable every day as we turn into this economy that's sort of on demand everything.
It's where we're going.
Yeah, the world has changed. It's no longer a building of a certain square footage where everything happens inside the walls, and then there's a shipping deck on the backside and a front entrance. It is every hybrid known to man out there, basically, that constitutes business formats these days.
I'm working with one client right now that has all of these little locations at his customers.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a headquarters. Bruce, there's no place for him to put it.
Bruce, I designed an 8x8 room that could work as a functional business model for an injectables and Botox medical spa. Okay, that could be basically rolled out in multiple locations and as a franchise model with training support. Okay, this is an 8x8 room. Okay, how many 8x8 rooms at $2 or $3 a square foot in a desirable area could you afford? Versus 6 or 7,000 in one location where you're now looking at locations that are based on affordability versus best market position.
Yes.
And the guy who basically I did this for, who basically then left it, wasn't interested in doing it anymore. When he was running three locations, he basically was driving around in his Mercedes with his, pit bull looks and big glasses. Okay. And his 3-piece suit. And he would go in there, Dr. Injectables, and basically do his thing. And people were booking on an app, paying him online. He had no front desk. He had no front receptionist. He had a call center that basically responded when he was basically providing the treatments. And he could have built that thing into multiple units, franchise model with support training, with a cost of franchise fee and build out that was absolutely controllable. And you tell me, if you are a medical spa in Newport Coast that basically has top dollar Irvine Company lease location and 7 or 8 rooms under one roof, how the heck are you going to compete with somebody like that is eating at your business?
You're not.
And providing hands-on, literally, one-on-one customer service.
Well, and you don't have big staff demands.
Correct.
You don't have any of the big demands. It's the best way to deliver.
In fact, even worse, he's coming to you possibly.
Yeah.
So my point is, you cannot ignore what's out there. And if you are basically a small business, it's even more critical, I think, that you tap into resources like you to come in and have that additional vantage point, that additional set of eyes to help guide you. Because at the end of the day, we all want to stay in business.
Absolutely.
And so in order to survive that and what may be coming around the corner, reach out for the support and of people that are qualified and are out there. Reach out to Bruce. Talk to him. Reach out to Paul. I don't know why, but right. or reach out and definitely reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. If any of this, any of our guests have been helpful, if you want to share any of your own personal stories, reach out to us. We are going to be doing one more show in the month of July, and then we're taking the month of August off and coming back full force in September. So if you're interested in being on the show, you're kind of out of luck for July and August. But reach out to me now so we can line you up for September. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Bruce, for being here. Another great show.
Thank you guys for inviting me. It was great fun.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.